Reading is dope.
Some books are for knowledge and some you read for entertainment. The same with blogs and magazines. Each word gets you higher and fills you with hope. You're now tuned into the podcast.
Reading is dope.
You're tuned in to the Reading is Dope podcast.
Dope.
Right here on WG4N.
Dope.
Yellow for Life Radio.
Dope. Reading is dope.
Yeah, this right here is episode 10. On this episode, I had a chance to speak with New York Times best-selling author that goes by the name of Miss Megan Hart, a.k.a. Mina Hardy. Yo, we had a dope little conversation. We talked about her large body of work, inspirations to start writing, her journey. It was very insightful.
Reading
it was a long conversation, too. So I did something that I've never done before. Decided to break this up into two parts. So this right here,
reading is
part
one.
Part two coming real soon. You're tuned in to Gilla for Life Radio. Alright, so I'm sitting here with Miss Megan Hart. How are you today?
I am doing really well. Thank you for asking.
No problem. So why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
A little bit about me. Well, as you introduced me, my name is Megan Hart. I'm probably best known for writing sexy romances and women's fiction. I've been doing that since 2002, but I have also branched out. I write under the name Mina Hardy, and Mina Hardy writes domestic thrillers and suspense, so I've been getting more into that. And I also really love writing horror and science fiction, so I'm working on getting into that as well.
Okay. So what made you decide on a different pen name?
The first pen name that I had was back in, I want to say 2012 or 2013. I actually wrote a young adult horror novel, and I decided to go with a pen name for that because writing erotic romance, I didn't feel that using the same name would be appropriate for writing books that were marketed toward teenagers. So I took a pen name. That pen name was M. Garner, and I published two books, and then unfortunately the publisher went out of business, so my young adult horror career did not take off. I have the rights back to those books, and I'm looking to rework them and maybe get them out, but I probably would publish them under my own name at this point, and you know, maybe make them more adult oriented rather than the YA route. But that's why I originally picked a pen name. And then when I started thinking about writing thrillers, it was similar, not because I was writing toward different age groups, but just romance readers really love their romances. And I just wanted to make sure that if somebody was going to pick up one of my thrillers, that they weren't expecting it to be a romance, because they definitely are not. And I hate for readers to be disappointed. I had published a few years ago some women's fiction novels that were not romances, and I did use my own name, and that was the publisher's choice. I had offered to use a pen name, and they really wanted me to write them or put them out under my Megan Hart name, which is my name. But they weren't romances, and some readers who picked those up expecting a romance, they were disappointed, and I heard about it, and I completely understand, and I do not blame them for being disappointed. I would be too if I was expecting a happy ending and I got something else. So I decided to use a pen name for the thrillers because I don't want readers to ever be disappointed. Okay. I don't want them to be disappointed when they pick up one of my books for any reason, but especially not because I have not met their expectations.
Right, okay.
So what they were thinking it would be.
So pretty much when people think of Megan Hart, you want them to think of erotica.
I think a lot of people would think of erotica, yeah. Okay. Or erotic romance.
Erotic romance.
Yeah. To me, there's a difference. Erotic romance to me is a romance start to finish.
Okay.
The book is a romance with erotic storylines or erotic elements.
Right.
And erotica doesn't have to have a romance in it. It could be just more of a sexy story where the sex is pushing the story versus the relationship.
Right. Okay.
It can feel like a really subtle difference. And for some people, there isn't one. But when I write erotic romance, for me, the romance is first and foremost. Okay. I do think if people hear my name, and if they're readers of mine, or if they've heard of me at all, they would think of sexy romances. Yeah.
See, yeah, that's because my lady, I told you, she was the reason why I emailed you, because she had finished reading one of your books. What was it called? Let me go back to her, because she was telling me which one it was. Let me go back and look real quick.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I'm going to tell you. Be patient. Which one was it?
I have a lot of books, so I'm not even going to make a guess.
I know. She told me you had about 30 books.
I counted up, because people have always asked me, how many books have you published? And not too long ago, I counted them up and counted novels, novellas, short stories, short story collections, and all of that. And it was close to 100.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But that includes, that even includes short stories and...
Right.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you well.
Okay. I'm getting a phone call.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of beeping. I found a book.
Okay, good.
It's called Switch.
Oh, Switch. Okay.
So she read that book, and then so we went to this. She wanted to go to this bookstore. It's called the Book Rack or something in Cape Girardeau. Uh-huh. So we were in the bookstore, and I guess she went in just so she could find your books.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't think nothing of it. So when we got home, I just happened to look, and she had them like stacked up. I'm like, Megan Hart. I said, you know what? I'm gonna reach out to her and see if she wants the interview.
I was so glad that you did. I was telling my husband earlier. I said, I get asked sometimes to do interviews and sometimes to do podcasts and stuff, but certainly not as much as I would like to, I guess. And I said, you know what? I always, unless it's somebody who's asking me to talk about something that I have absolutely no expertise in, I love to be asked to talk. I always say yes, because you know what? If you say no, you might not get asked again.
There you go.
So I'm so thrilled that you reached out to me, and I'm so thrilled that she picked up a book and enjoyed it so much that she talked to you about it.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, so have you had a chance to listen to any of the episodes?
I listened to just a piece of one of them, but I did listen to the one that you sent me to, or the one that you sent me the text. So the one with the music.
Yeah, last night.
I listened to all of that today as I was working. That was great.
Oh,
but but I can't listen to podcasts when I'm working, because with words,
the talking,
people talking,
yeah.
I can't pay attention to that and right at the same time.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I'm going to start listening to this. And I was like, oh, great. This is great background music. I always write to music, and I really enjoyed it. So I usually listen to podcasts when I'm driving somewhere, and I just haven't gone anywhere lately. So I have, next time when I'm taking a trip, I'm going to listen to some of the other Reading is Dope podcasts that you've done.
All right. Well, cool. Well, the whole essence of the podcast is I interview different authors, just one author on each episode. And I have them talk about their careers, their books, their inspirations, just anything, that comes up in the conversation. I typically like to go with the flow of the conversation. I have some questions that, that if everything gets stuck. Okay,
yeah.
Well, let me ask this question real quick. hopefully unglue the conversation a little bit.
So you don't want dead space.
Right. we have too many awkward silences.
Well, sometimes authors can be it's such a solitary thing, and we can be weird and introverted and not good conversationalists. So it's good to have questions to ask.
True. But yeah, I started the Reading is Dope movement, and I don't know if you know, but DOPE is an acronym. It stands for Dreams, Opportunities, Purpose, and Education. It's all about following your dreams, embracing opportunities to find your purpose, and seek education.
I did not know that, but I love that.
Oh, well, thank you. So, and I love to read, so I decided to, build a podcast around that idea. So that's why I called it the Reading is Dope podcast. I mean, it started with t-shirts. I was selling t-shirts with that on it. You know, I was have bookmarks. I was getting into different libraries. And I think the whole idea is to promote literacy. And maybe inspire people to want to read more. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and make it, I guess, I don't know if it's making it fun, but, you know what I mean? But, I don't know. I guess just the idea of making, of sharing the joys of reading, of how it can be fun. It can be beautiful to your imagination, you know? I mean,
yeah, I think reading is fun. I've always been a big reader and I love reading, and it's one of my favorite things to do, actually. And so I'm always a little surprised when somebody says, oh, reading, it's so boring, or it's so much work, or I don't know. But if you haven't found the right books, of course it's not fun, but when you do, when you find that book or the books that excite you and, like you said, open up your mind and your imagination or teach you something new, how can that not be fun?
Right. And I think that's what it is. I think people just haven't found the right material to read.
Or they think that because the books that we're made to read in school are not fun. I mean, sometimes they are, but, you know, honestly, if you're not connecting with those books for one reason or another and you're forced to read them, of course reading doesn't seem fun. Oh no, I have to read this. Oh, it's so boring. And that's what you hold on to. Yeah, totally.
You like, and I'm not doing this reading thing ever again.
Yeah. And honestly, watching TV or scrolling through your phone can just require so much effort that sometimes if you're tired or you're just not feeling it, reading is an effort and a struggle, and it is harder. It does make more of an effort, but I think it is fun, obviously.
Right. So you got 100 different projects over the, over like what time span, like how long?
I had my first book published in 2002.
Okay.
And that was with a digital publisher, an online book publisher, which was before Kindle, before any device to read books online. So it was super early days of small indie press digital books, way, way, way back. And my first book was a fantasy romance called An Exaltation of Larks. And that press eventually went out of business. And then I sold to another early e-press a few years later. And then I sold my first traditional published book. My first contract was in 2005. And my first traditionally published book came out with Harlequin, and that was in 2006, or maybe 2005. It was a long time ago. I can't quite remember. So I've been published since 2002, and now that's 2022, so.
20 years.
Yeah. Jeez, 20 years. Oh, my gosh.
Hey.
That's crazy.
That's dope, though.
Yeah.
My question is, though, how were people reading the books if, you know, they didn't have the Kindle, didn't have any of those other...
So you would get a PDF and just read it on your computer.
Oh, okay.
And I think that you could get... I think there was something called an e-bookman that was kind of like a BlackBerry or, one of those early pre-smartphone devices, they were kind of like smartphones, but they were more like planners or
like not a BlackBerry, but what you call it? I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it though.
Yeah. It was like a handheld device where you could keep your calendar and maybe send emails.
Yeah.
But I don't think you could make phone calls on it. So there were things like that. And if you had one of those, you could download the books onto it. And there was a super early ebook reader, and I think it was called an ebook man. I didn't have one.
That's interesting.
I published, through this digital publisher, but I could only read it in my browser.
Right.
And but mostly they sold print books.
Okay.
This is how long ago it was and how much things have changed since then. I don't even think Amazon.com was a thing in 2002. I'm not sure exactly when the company became more popular, but in the beginning, it really only sold books,
right,
and then started selling everything.
Reading is a way to live out your dreams. Cause reality ain't always what it seems. Reading is a path to opportunities. It can build bridges between you and me. Reading is a way to find your purpose. Cause you know you're more than what they see on the surface. Reading is a way to seek education. It stimulates your mind and increases contemplation. That's why reading is dope.
And so, really, the only way for anybody to get my first books were through me. So it wasn't vanity publishing. Vanity publishing is where they charge you money to publish your book. And then they publish it. Well, sure, you pay thousands of dollars and they publish it and print it. They don't do the editing for you or anything like that. Or at least back in 2002, this is how it was. So I didn't pay them to publish my book. They paid me based on book sales.
Hmm.
But really, the only way anybody could get the books was if I had them and they wanted to buy one from me. They could go online and order it from this website, from the publisher. But it wasn't like going to Amazon, where small press and indie publishers now can publish books and have them available on Amazon and iTunes and Barnes and Noble and all of those places. It wasn't even like that. And I was like, oh, you want to buy my book? You got to go here to this website. And they were like, yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about ordering. You know, can I buy one from you? And so I usually just had, it was an investment. You know, I bought them at whatever they charged me, and then I sold them for a little bit more than that. Unfortunately, I had friends and family who did buy the books, but I was not making any money, you know.
Right.
So, I just had a book that somebody had published, but it was very,
that was a big thing, though. I mean,
yeah.
Especially in 2002, that was probably huge.
Yeah. I mean, I was excited.
Right. I mean, I can imagine. But, and you know, it's funny you say that, you know, back then people were iffy about buying things on the internet. I mean, even nowadays, some people are slow to get on that train. So I can imagine how much pushback you had back then.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, did they have any credit cards back then? Oh, I mean, they did, but I mean.
There were credit cards, but it was, I feel like even in 2002, the internet was still, people were cautious with it.
Right.
And certainly, in 2002, did I even not have dial-up internet? I can't remember. I think but in 2002, because I'm trying to remember like when I first had internet, and that would have been in, 95. 96, 97, like the late 90s. So by 2002, I'm pretty sure I had wired internet, but not wireless.
Right. Oh, no. Wireless was not at that point. I think in 2002, I was an undergrad. So I remember having to go to the computer lab to even like just do my papers and everything because, I didn't have a computer in my dorm. So it just didn't matter. But, I mean, 2002 was, that was 20 years ago.
it was. And a lot, so much has changed. And I can, think about, in 2002, published my first book with this really tiny online press. And people were like, digital books aren't real books. And now, now so many books maybe don't even have a print version. They're just available digitally and people read them on their Kindle. You read it on your phone. You can have an iPad or I think Barnes & Noble has their own reader. They have the Nook, and Kobo, I think, has an e-book reader. And it's not even a question that is a digital book a real book.
Right.
You know? You can get a digital book from the library.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they haven't, like, our public library has an app to where you can, you can actually check out books, like, through the app. It's interesting.
I love it. I literally live across the street from my library, which is, which for me is huge. I live in Ohio now. I've only lived here for 4 years. Where I lived before was super rural, and I did not live anywhere close to anything. So I moved here, and I said, oh my gosh, I can walk across the street and go to the library. But guess what I do? I just get ebooks, and they just show up on my Kindle, and I don't even walk over there. I don't even have to.
So I imagine that library has all your books, or a lot of them.
You know, when I first moved here, I went and looked, and they had a couple on the shelves, and I have donated, when I published my first thriller using Mina Hardy's name, I donated a copy to them, and they did just let me know that the next Mina Hardy book comes out in December, and that they already put it in there by request. But they probably don't have all of them. And I've never really checked their catalog to see. Because you can get interlibrary loans. So if I looked up the library catalog, probably most of them are available, just maybe not at the one across the street.
Right. So when you walked into that library and you saw your book, how does that make you feel?
I love it. I don't care how many books I've published. Seeing my book on the shelf in the library or the bookstore it's magic.
I know.
I found a used book. I went overseas a few years ago, and I was in a used bookstore, and I found a copy of one of my books there.
Wow.
And I was so excited. Wow. And I was like, take my picture with this. And then there was someone there, and she bought it, because I said, look at this book, I wrote it, I'm the author. And then she bought it.
Hey, that's dope.
Yep. That was very exciting. I hope I never stop being excited to see my book out somewhere in the world.
That's what's up. You gotta have passion for what you do. Once you lose the passion for what you do, then I mean, your work suffers.
You gotta
go back and find that inspiration. Which brings me to my next question. Why did you start writing? Like, what inspired you to start writing?
I have wanted to be a writer for as long as I can remember. And I know that that sounds like a cliched story. Although, I don't know. I have friends who didn't start writing until, you know, adulthood. They just figured out that they wanted to start writing. But I wrote stories all way back in kindergarten. When I first could learn to write letters, write words, I started writing stories.
Nice.
And when I was in about sixth grade, it occurred to me, hey, this is something that people actually do for a living. Like, this is someone's job. And I was a huge avid reader, and I realized that the people who are writing the books that I love to read, this is what they did for their career. And I thought, that's what I want. That's what I want to do. So about age 12, that's what I had my mind set on.
Okay. So you just started writing?
Yes. I just started writing. And I wrote short stories. I actually started writing what I love to read, which is horror, science fiction, fantasy. I started writing short stories. I started submitting stories when I was in high school, and they all got rejected. But I got, I would ask as a gift, could my parents get me a subscription to the Writer's Digest? And then I would read the articles and, you know, find places to submit the stories to. And in those days, you had to send a hard copy of your story with a self-addressed stamped envelope for the response. And then, so not only did I get rejected, but I had to pay them. I had to pay for the stamps. send me back.
That had to pay for the rejection.
Yes. Yep. So I would save my babysitting money to buy stamps and envelopes, and I got a lot of rejections. And when I went to college, I knew that I wanted to be a writer, but I just didn't think, well, what am I going to go to major in? Because I don't think you can major. You could major in creative writing or English or whatever, but I just really felt like it's such a lofty goal to become a published author, right? I need something to fall back on, I guess.
Right.
So I went for journalism, which was still writing. And I, you know, I figured, well, at least I can still be a writer. And I don't like it. I don't like writing nonfiction. So I never really worked as a journalist.
Okay.
It didn't really pan out. But fortunately, I did start writing. I just kept writing fiction. And eventually I got published. And in and amongst other things, raising my kids and all of that stuff, I kept writing. And eventually it paid off. And I got a book published, and then another and another, and 20 years later I'm still doing it.
So what was the name of that first book?
The first book was it was called An Exaltation of Larks.
Exaltation of Larks. What was that about?
Yeah. Oh gosh. It was about a young woman who and it's had several versions, like when I first wrote it, then it got published, and then I started rewriting it. And it's not available. If you ever find a copy, it's going to be
rare
in a used bookstore or something. And it's, yeah, it might be rare, but it's not valuable.
Hey, you never know.
I guess, maybe.
One day it will be valuable.
Maybe. So it was about a young woman who, she was going to become, she had to become queen of her country, but the laws required that she needed to be married, you know, because the woman couldn't possibly rule a country herself, blah, blah, blah. And so she has all these knights and whatever vying for her attention, and she falls in love with this one who woos her and tells her she's wonderful and all of that. And her fairy witch godmother is, she appears and she's like, he is no good. I'm sending him away. And he is bad for you. And also he's lying to you and he's terrible. He's trash. She sends him away. He has to go away to the, to the evil sorcerer's castle. And the princess who needs to become, or wants to become queen, she sets off on a journey to rescue him. So it's about, instead of the knight rescuing the princess is rescuing the knight. And so she goes on this journey, and she, along the way, meets, you know, a quirky cast of characters and a unicorn and, I don't know, elves, whatever. She gets to the bad guy's castle, and he's very handsome, and he's very damaged.
Threw her whole concentration off.
Yes.
Like, I was coming here to kill you.
Yes.
I can't even do it now.
Yep. She's like, you are so horrible and awful, but I'm going to fall in love with you.
the irony.
Yes. And he's under a curse, and falling in love with her, it lifts the curse. And then she finds out that the reason why the fairy godmother sent away the guy who said he wanted to marry her was because, you know, she was meant to meet this other guy instead. And so there is a happily ever after. It was definitely a romance. I laugh when I talk about it, but it's with fondness, because it played into so many tropes. And the reason why people like to read any genre is because of the expectations. So if you like to read horror, your expectations, you're going to get scared or disturbed. And people read romance because they want that happy ever after ending. They want to know that no matter what happens, the ups and downs of the relationship, they're going to work through it and end up happy at the end.
Okay.
But I get a giggle because it's very Jane Eyre, Mr. Rochester, or Pride and Prejudice, like super handsome but grumpy hero who treats her badly because he's in love with her, but she you know, saves them and makes them a better person.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I would write that story now.
Why not? So you've grown a lot.
Yeah. My expectations of relationships has definitely matured. I didn't even write it in 2002. I wrote it much earlier than that. It's actually, now I just remembered this, it was based on a story that I wrote when I was in high school.
Oh, okay. So,
you
had a little bit of fantasy view of relationships at that point.
I also had a terrible boyfriend.
So you wanted to make him better.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, it makes sense. Hey, that's why they say writing is therapy. You were able to process everything and make sense of it.
Yes. If I could change this, if I could magically make this different, what would I make different? Oh, right. He would be awful, but then he would be better because I made him better.
Right. He was your project.
Yeah, that didn't happen. Right. Actually, years later, I think we probably connected through Facebook or something like that. And he was like, you know, I read your book. And my mom read your book, and then she gave me hell because she was like, you were so awful to her.
So he knew it was about him?
Yeah, he knew.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, yep. But you know what? On one hand, you got to feel good that somebody wrote a book about you.
Yeah, right?
Even if it was bad, it painted you in the worst light. But
even if you are the bad guy, somebody took the time to write and publish a book about you.
There you go.
I wonder if he ever talks about that to anybody now.
No, I mean, that could be a badge of honor. Like, yeah, it you could, know, I got a be. Book wrote about me. What about you?
Exactly.
Hey, that's what's up.
Reading is dope.
I saw her. I watch her sleep. The beauty in mind's eye, I watch her wonder. Resting peacefully. In a moment, she wasn't keeping up with everyday duties, the societal norms of the facade of having a perfect life. She was still. Flashback memories of how we met, the smile on her face took me in awe. Even in the silent moment, I hear her laughter.
Yes.
She was somehow perfect.
You know it.
Carrying baggage claims of bags that's not hers alone, she make it look so easy. As I push her hair out her face, I softly rub the dry tears that she once cried before bed from the creases of her eyes away from her cheek. As they fall from her face to the pillow, the debris spread across my fingers. Deep down, I don't want her to do it alone, but see her pride.
Damn.
Her pride keeps her going. She holds standards so high that I myself feel incompetent to feel her shoes. She's rare. I can honestly say she's rare. The beautiful gem hidden amongst the imposters of talkers, hidden in plain sight, but see, I can see her. I can see her.
Oh, yeah.
See, I saw her. I watched her sleep. Beautifully, in the mind's eye, see, I watched her wonder. Peacefully. And I'm taken back by her silent presence.
I know that's right. And that right there is what dreams are made of. I want to introduce to you Miss Dream Nelson, author of Utterable Words. Make sure you check her out. Go get the book at www.idreamwrites.com. That's EYEJREAMWRITES.com. Once again, that's EYEJREAMWRITES.com. So, Mina Hardy is your other name, right?
Yes.
Like, what made you come up with Mina Hardy? Like, where did that come from?
Well, I knew that I was going to use a pen name when I was branching out into this new genre. And so I wanted to kind of be on the same place on the bookshelf.
Oh, makes sense.
So I wanted to have at least the last name be
close.
And so I was like, Hart. Okay, Hardy, which honestly, I really like Tom Hardy, the actor. Oh. And so, you know, I was like, Hardy, that's a good name. It's close to heart. And Nina just came because it fit with it. And I don't know, Nina's a character in Dracula. Mm. And maybe I just watched Dracula. I can't remember exactly. It was a few years ago. But and then I Googled and there was no Mina Hardy at the time. There wasn't anybody writing books under the name Nina Hardy. And I couldn't find any. Sometimes if you Google a name, you know, there are lots of people with that name. But at the time, there wasn't any. And I looked on social media and I could grab the Mina Hardy domain name and Instagram. I didn't bother with a Twitter, but which I should have because there is a Mina Hardy on Twitter now.
It is.
And ooh. Yeah. And
trademark infringement.
She's not a writer. She just posts like basically naked pictures of herself. So
wow.
Surprise if anybody's looking for Mina Hardy. That's not me. That one's not me.
But I mean you could make that work for you.
I could. Nina Hardy doesn't write the sexy books though. I am Mina Hardy. It's not. I don't think of myself as two different people.
Right.
My pen name is me.
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Pretend. Hyde.
Yes. Some people have secret pen names that they don't admit is them. You know.
Right.
I never made a secret that Mina Hardy is me. I cross promote and tell everybody. But the Twitter Mina Hardy is not me.
Okay. so everybody
has to Google that.
If you look on Twitter, that's not Mina Hardy.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I mean, it's maybe her name is Mina Hardy.
Maybe.
But that is not me.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. Yep. She's got
she's giving a real meaning to erotica.
Yes.
So how many books have you published under Mina Hardy?
Just one so far, and the second one comes out in December.
Oh, okay. So are you planning on publishing like the books you're working on now, are they for Mina or Megan?
The gothic horror romance novella would be Megan.
Okay.
Because it's romance. And the potential YA thriller, possibly Mina Hardy, although it would be YA. But the main reason why I went with a pen name with my previous young adult stuff was because Megan Hart writes sexually graphic, erotic stories. And I just didn't want there to be like young people. Hey, I love this, you know, horror book. What else has she written? And then they're getting linked to Switch or Naked or Dirty. Those were some of my first books.
Okay.
And I am not ever ashamed that I write erotic material. I get a lot of questions about it. You know, sometimes people are like,
you write dirty books.
Yeah, I do, and I love it, and I love writing them, but I didn't think it was cool to cross-promote that to young people on purpose, not that they can't use the internet and just figure it out, but that's their parents' problem. That's not my problem. But, so with the thriller idea that I'm tossing around right now, I don't know if I would use Mina Hardy for it because it's young adult, but I wouldn't see the same problem with it.
Okay.
I don't think my adult Mina Hardy books are, you know, inappropriate for older teenagers. I mean, so the one that I'm working on is only young adult. It's young adult because of the age of the characters and who it would be marketed to.
I mean, nowadays, I don't think you really... have to worry about it because teenagers are getting everything they want to see on the
internet. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, maybe they need to read a book.
I mean,
because the internet is leaving nothing to the imagination. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if they pick up a book and read it, then that's killing two birds with one stone. You know what I'm saying? We're getting them to read. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And they're reading your book. So it's like, okay. Instead of just going on YouTube or, I mean, God forbid, Pornhub.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And getting it raw and uncut.
Yeah. And I feel like at least I'm proud of the stories that I write, and I'm proud of the choices that characters make, even if I kind of have a little funny tagline for Mina Hardy, which is people making bad choices and you shouldn't trust them. But she writes thrillers, But my erotic romances, I think there are good lessons to learn, and we're very, violence is super okay in our country, but sex isn't, you know, even though it's everywhere.
Right.
So I actually wouldn't think that a young adult couldn't read my books, my sexy books, that they're too shocking or, you know, oh my gosh, they couldn't possibly read about two people who fall in love and have a healthy sex life that's consensual, and the woman is actually getting her pleasure, and that the guy that she's with or the girl that she's with or whoever, that's important. Like, I write my books not to write lessons. I'm trying to entertain.
Right.
But I also hope, and I try to write stories that have a positive message in them, that sex is a part of life and love, and
I mean, you're here even because of sex.
Yeah, yeah. If somebody didn't have sex,
you wouldn't be here. at the end of the day, I mean.
And, you know, there are people who don't care or want sex, and that, you know, that's totally valid. But most people think about it or want it, or they make bad choices because of it, or they make good choices because of it. I mean, it's a big motivator.
Right.
And so when I say I didn't want to cross promote my books because I didn't want to promote sexy books to young people, that was just because I don't think it's necessarily appropriate to
promote it to them.
They weren't books that were written for young adults. But I have children, and I was asked often, what would you think if your kids read your books? And I'm like, well, first of all, they probably wouldn't, because mom wrote it. Right. But I haven't written anything that I'm ashamed of, and there aren't any lessons in my books that I didn't teach them myself.
Right.
I have a son and a daughter, and I don't think either of them have ever read any of my books, and they probably just never will, but if they did, I wouldn't be worried about it.
So was Switch, you say Switch was one of your first ones that you published under the romantic erotica?
Yes. Yep. It first came out in, I don't remember when, 2009 maybe?
Okay.
2008 or 2009. So that was one of my first books, it was one of the first books that I wrote for Harlequin.
Okay.
So it wasn't, that's an early book. So just that she found that at all is exciting, that it was out there, that it's still on the shelf somewhere. Did it have a flower on the cover, or did it have two people on the cover? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I can ask her, though.
Because the original cover had two people on it, and they were like basically naked, two naked people.
Right.
Pretty much. And then they recovered it and put a flower on it, and for a long time all my books had flowers on the front, and I hated it.
it just didn't look romantically erotic.
It didn't, but when 50 Shades of Grey came out, it changed the entire landscape of erotic romance. And those covers had distinct images on the front. They didn't have, the original covers didn't have people, they had the first one, I think, had a gray tie. one had a mask, I think. I don't remember what the other one had. And so that book made such a huge change across the industry. Totally. So many books got new covers and they started featuring like a pair of shoes, right. A wedding ring.
Some obscure.
Not people, but a thing. And right. Mine had flowers. A lot of the books had flowers on them, not just mine.
Right.
And so at a certain point in, I want to say 2011, 2012, somewhere around there, you could go into Barnes & Noble in the romance section and just see an entire section of books, and they all had flowers and one-word titles. So, and mine were amongst them, but...
that's
what's
up, though. So you mentioned 50 Shades of Grey. So when that became popular, did you see an increase in sales for yours?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's beautiful.
Yep. So 50 Shades of Grey came out, and for whatever reason, and people can argue whether it's there were good books or bad books, I say if somebody enjoys reading a book, that makes it a good book.
Right.
For that person. I'm not going to argue with anybody whether they think a certain book is good or bad. But when those books came out, they just went viral and exploded, and they were mainstream. So people who'd never picked up a romance, much less a sexy romance, they were just, everybody was reading it because they wanted to find out what it was about. And so some people read it and they're like, I'm never going to read a book again. That was it. I don't care. Some people read it and thought, okay, I love this. Where can I get more? Nice. And those people then went searching for and found, fortunately for me, my books and my peers' books. And, you know, if you've heard the saying, a rising tide lifts all boats, mm-hmm. Ooh, a lot of boats got lifted.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And yeah, it was great. And so the only problem was that people were saying, 50 Shades of Grey is the first of its kind. And, you know, those of us who've been doing it since, you know, whenever, 2000 like,
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're like, yeah, it's not the first. Maybe, depending on your opinion, maybe not the best, maybe right. The best. But I will never be sorry that those books hit the way they did, because I had so many people who read them, loved them, and then said, give me more. What else can I find? What else can I read? And then they found my books, and maybe they wouldn't have otherwise.
Right. And they found Megan Hart.
Yes. And I had so many people say, I hadn't read a book since high school. I hadn't read a book since elementary school. I've never liked reading, but I picked up this book and it just ignited my love of reading. And now I can't get enough. And now I love your books. And now I love this other author's books. And I just have found reading, and it's fun, and I love it. And that always makes my heart happy.
Nice. Nice.
Reading is dope.
Hi, I'm Nicole, the founder and president of Single Parent Families Battling Cancer Foundation, created in memory of Tanisha Johnson. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization assisting with day-to-day needs of single parent households affected by any form of cancer. To learn more, please visit spfbcancer.org. Or visit our Facebook page, Single Parent Families Battling Cancer Foundation. Thank you.
So, what was the first romantic erotic book that you ever remember reading?
That I ever remember reading. Okay. let's see. So early romances, you know, in the late 70s, early to mid 80s, they were called bodice rippers because a lot of them were historical and they featured covers with, you know, bodices getting ripped off. And and that's the reason why they're called bodice rippers, which isn't really relevant today, I don't think. I don't know. Maybe bodices still get ripped. I don't write historicals. I don't know. A bodice is a, you know, like a, you know, it's the top part of a dress.
Oh,
like it's your bodice. So in the old historicals, there was always this super alpha guy, you know, forcing his woo, forcing his wild on this woman.
Just come ripping bodices off. Give me that bodice.
Ripping the bodices off. Yes.
Wow.
And so that is one of the reasons why romance has a bad reputation,
right?
Is because people are like remembering that. But if that's what your opinion of romance still is, you haven't read one recently.
You are archaic.
Yeah. Yes. But I would have to say that my first sexy romance was probably one of those historical, oh gosh, I want to say it was maybe The Flame and the Flower. And that's a really famous historical romance. And I'm going to Google who wrote it because I don't want to say the wrong person. But it was... Kathleen E. Woodiwiss, she wrote The Flame and the Flower, and it is this super dirty book I probably took out of the library and didn't tell my mom what it was about, and that's the first one that I can remember
What year was it published?
Let's see. It was originally published in 1972. So I wouldn't have read it until at least 1984, because I was born in 1971, so I wouldn't have read it until I was like a middle school age, maybe. But I also really loved Joanna Lindsay, and she also wrote really sexy romance novels, and she wrote this one that was called Warrior's Woman, and it was a science fiction one about this character, the main character. She had a spaceship and she flew onto this warrior planet where they were like barbarians, and so she was from this super advanced society, but she
like the Amazons.
Yeah, I don't know if she was like an Amazon or if she was just, she lived in a on a planet that had spaceships. And she could, I remember she could go in this little machine and she could change her hair color and her eye color,
right?
And she lands or crash lands on a planet where the men are all barbarians, and it's really kind of primitive. And he's all, you know, he's all like, he's a barbarian in a loincloth. And I do not remember, I'm going to have to reread that one. I don't remember all the details, but I do remember that I turned those pages really fast and probably bookmarked them and shared it with my friends and how to read page 52. There's sex.
That was some real men are from Venus, men are from Mars, women are from Venus type shit.
Yes.
She's playing really on the theme real.
Yeah. So those are the ones that I remember reading when I was younger.
Could the men talk, or were they? And she had to come teach him how to talk.
I don't remember about The Flame and the Flower. I don't remember much about it other than that there was like pretty detailed sex in it, which I was like, whoa.
So that was the only thing you worried about.
Yeah. But the Warrior's Woman one, yeah, he could talk.
He was very
you know, like he expected her to do as she was told because he was the warrior. You know, he was the dominant one, and she was kind of like, yeah, about that. I live in a place with a spaceship, so
right.
I'm not gonna do what you tell me.
He's like, me hungry.
Something like that. I still have mine. I'm gonna have to reread that. They were fun and they were romantic, and I always gravitated toward the books that had sex in them versus not.
Right. The shit you wasn't supposed to.
Yes. I mean, I read, you know, Clan of the Cave Bear books, and they had sex in it. Those got passed around. Kids these days, they don't understand. They don't understand about getting the Flowers in the Attic book out of the library and, you know, marking the pages, passing it around your friend group in school, because everybody's got to read the hinted at sex scene.
Everything is in their face. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't I'm not trying to be like, you know, get off my lawn. Back in my day, we had that.
Right.
But I mean, we did. I mean, I did. I'm old.
No, it's all good. You're probably about the same age, to be honest with you.
I'm 51, so.
I'll be 43 in October. Yeah. So I'm not too far apart.
Yeah, you're still on the end. You're like on the end of the Gen X time frame. Yeah. When we had to, you know, go to the 7-Eleven and buy magazines if we wanted to see things.
Right. They were on the top shelf.
Yeah.
Behind everything.
Like a, yeah, like a plastic thing right in front of them.
Right.
Or like, maybe someone's...
Those are the yeah magazines.
Maybe someone's dad had a stash, you know, under the bed. Right. Or something.
Brother. Right.
But yeah, reading is dope.
Yeah, no doubt. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Like I said, that's only part one. Part two is coming at you real soon, so be on the lookout for that. Also, be on the lookout for the new book. But I'll let her tell you a little something about that.
Hey everyone, Nina Hardy here, asking you to check out my next release, We Knew All Along. It comes out on December 6th, and you can find it at any place where you buy books.
Yeah, no doubt. So make sure you go out and support. Also, if you want to support the Reading is Dope podcast, you can purchase some of our merch on our website, www.gillagear.com. That's GUYLLAGEAR.com. Also, subscribe to our newsletter on DopeDigitalMedia.com. And as always, the Reading is Dope podcast is brought to you by Gilla for Life Radio in conjunction with Dope Digital Media, where we always encourage you to be Gilla for life.
Life.